You're listening to SearchSecurity.com. Hi, I'm Neil Reuter. It's cliche to say that your security is only as good as your weakest link. But the reason that statements become cliches in the first place is that they're so damn true. Certainly, when it comes to regulatory compliance, outsourcing can very well be your weakest link. What good does it do to run a tight ship within the organization if you trust your networks, applications, and sensitive data to third parties that don't apply the same rigorous standards? Today, we'll ask Dick Mackey, Vice President of System Experts, what we can and should be doing to assure third-party compliance. Dick is a leading industry expert on distributed computing infrastructure and security, and he's a frequent presenter and writer on regulatory compliance subjects. Hi, Dick. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Neil. It's great to be here.
Dick, specific regulations aside, how do I determine what policies and practices I need my partners to adhere to? Do I simply attempt to impose my own internal policies and practices on them?
Neil, the most important issue is identifying what risks are associated with a particular information or process that you've shared with your partner, right? So what you're looking for is achieving equivalent care to what you have internally. And what you're really looking for is you want to establish that the care that your partner is going to provide is going to, at a minimum, meet your regulatory requirements. And beyond that, you look to ensure that the risk of compromise that they've achieved is acceptable. So you try to apply your risk assessment process to the process that they're using to protect the information. Now, they may not come to the exact same controls or the same policies, but what you're looking for is equivalent. So if, for example, if you're a financial organization and you're sharing account data, you need to ensure that the identity can't be stolen because of a number of different regulations you come under. So, for example, FFIEC or the Red Flag Rules or Gramm-Leach-Bliley or the Massachusetts Identity Theft Law, all those require that certain due care be in place. What you look for is strong identity management, strong access control, strong data handling practices and monitoring. They may not be the same practices that you have in place, but they should be equivalent in strength and achieve the objective. To answer the second part of your question about imposing internal policies, can't really impose your same policies on them, but you can look for the adequacy of their controls, and that's basically what you're after.
So if their controls are adequate, I'm looking at their security, and I'm considering the compliance piece as a subset of the overall risk?
Yes. Exactly. In fact, I always try to look at the objective risk, the operational risk first, and then see how that analysis applies to the regulatory risk. Because if they don't have the right controls in place, you could actually suffer a regulatory violation, even without having a compromise. But the first thing I always look for is the compromise, the real opportunity or the risk of compromise, and then look at the regulatory risk.
So what are some of those areas of risk of noncompliance? What are some of the critical things that I have to look for?
The issues that I'd look for are making sure that there are the correct policies in place and governance in place, meaning that there are the right people responsible, that there's the right controls, identity management, and access controls in place, so that if there are specific requirements that come out of a regulation, say for encryption or for regularly checking who has access to particular types of data, then you want to make sure that those processes are in place. If your partner doesn't have those in place, you could fail an audit, for example. That would immediately put you at risk of being run afoul of the regulation.
And how do I formalize this process? How do I enforce policies and requirements? Talk about things like SLAs and audits, enforcement language in the contract. How do I make this stick?
Well, the easiest way is to point at all the regulatory requirements that you have when you're in the discussion with the partner so that you're saying, I need to meet these regulatory requirements, and therefore I'm under pressure to have you meet them as well. So if you can go to a blanket statement like that for your service providers, the service provider will understand and then try to put those controls in place. Otherwise, they realize that not only are they at risk of losing your business, but anybody else like you. Now, on the other hand, if you don't have a regulation to point to, say something like PCI or the Red Flag Rules or the Massachusetts law, you can talk about the qualities of the data that need to be maintained. So, for example, you're going to set specific requirements on keeping the confidentiality, the integrity, or the availability of the data, whatever the regulations require. Unfortunately, it's likely the only recourse you're going to have if they don't comply is either to terminate the contract or sue or find another or not even engage with this company to begin with. But the point is that if you don't have a regulation to point to, you're going to have to make those contractual statements inside the terms and conditions of the agreements you're going to be working under.
You mentioned some of the recourses I might have if things don't go well. Are there ways that I can limit my exposure if things don't go well? Are there ways that I can reduce the risk if there's noncompliance because of failure on my partner's part?
That's interesting. I mean, the best way of limiting your exposure is to limit the kind of information that you're actually sharing and then limit the exposure to compliance altogether. So if you can eliminate or reduce the kind of information that you're sharing. So, for example, if the original design of the service proposed that you're going to share Social Security numbers or bank account numbers, if you can find other ways of identifying the people or identifying the accounts, you can eliminate the exposure altogether and take the compliance right out of the mix. On the other hand, it's really difficult if you have to share this kind of information to ever really reduce your compliance exposure, because if they're not compliant, you're not compliant. If they have a compromise, it's likely that you're responsible for it. In fact, that's the way most of these regulations are written.
Okay, so the requirements are agreed to, the contracts are signed, life is good. What should I be doing from that point? What should I be doing to monitor partner activities and ensure that they're being compliant?
Well, the first thing you need to do is make sure that you don't treat every partner as exactly the same. You want to have them tiered into risk groups and treat the more sensitive relationships differently than you treat less sensitive relationships. The second is that in these cases where you really do pose some regulatory risk and some real information risk, so for those most sensitive services, you want to visit them at least once a year and have an in-depth discussion about exactly how this relationship is working, whether controls are effective, et cetera. So what you want to do is ask, what's changed in the service in the past year? What's changed in the business that they're involved with? So, for example, if they've gotten involved in other areas that might pose more of a risk to the service or that you consume, it may have an impact on you. You want to talk about the technology, both on your side and on their side, and find out whether the changes in technology that they've deployed or you've deployed has put you at a higher risk or even reduced risk. And then you look at whether new options are there for controls to be inserted so that you can do better next year than you do this year. And then understand whether there are new threats that have come up in the past year that didn't exist when you struck your original agreement. In the meantime, between those yearly meetings, you should have ways of monitoring the traffic that goes between your environments and then talking regularly about how you should respond to incidents, how you detect intrusions, etc., so that you're ready in the case that something goes wrong in the relationship.
So what regulations require that you evaluate the service provider and talk about knowing what to evaluate and what to look for?
Almost all the regulations actually require you to evaluate service provider performance or security measures. So, for example, PCI has a stipulation in there, HIPAA, FFIEC, Gramm-Leach Bliley, the Massachusetts Identity Theft Laws, and the FTC's red flag rules all hold the organization who has been entrusted with the data responsible for the security practices of their service providers and partners. So basically, if you're involved in any kind of regulatory compliance, this shouldn't be new to you. So what you want to look for, though, is first, make sure that the organization you're dealing with, the service provider, understands the sensitivity of the information they've been given and that they're familiar with the kinds of steps that they should be taking to protect that data. So that's kind of interesting because at a very high level, what you want is you want to make sure that this isn't new to them, right? So the next thing you want to look for is that once they understand that they have the structure in place, the information security management system in place to take care of that data, that there are responsible parties in place, that there are access controls and identity management in place to make sure that only the right people have access to the data and that they minimize the access to the data that people inside their environment have, that they monitor that access to the data and they monitor their systems, and that they have intrusion detection mechanisms in place and intrusion response. And then finally, what you'd like to look for is that you want to look at their entire environment and make sure that they have a mindset that will allow them to improve once they recognize there are any problems associated with their system of of managing their security, that they recognize that improvements need to be made, and they have a systematic way of actually making those improvements. So what that does is that allows you to understand that an organization isn't just solving a point in space or point in time problem, but they have a system in place that's going to get better and allow them to adapt to new requirements as time goes on. And that's what you're really looking for. Then beyond that, what you're looking for are the specific requirements that come out of the regulation. So PCI has a whole set of requirements about firewalls and virus protection. You're going to look for those specific technical requirements that come out of those regulations, and you're going to make sure that the organization is familiar with them and has implemented them.
So how should I go about this and verifying this? Should I be doing questionnaires? Should I be doing interviews with them? Should I be talking to other customers? Should I go on site and do a site evaluation, site assessment?
Yeah, and that all depends on how much risk you see in dealing with a particular partner. So what you're looking for here is you're trying to find a way of assessing whether this organization has good security practices in place. At times, organizations have had outside assessments done, and you may be able to trust them. You ask them a few questions about how the assessment was done, who did it, and you may be able to trust that kind of assessment. So that would be a third-party assessment. Other organizations will use that as input, and then on high-risk partnerships, they'll actually go and do site assessments on their highest-risk relationships. And they'll do those regularly every year, for example. But depending on where it falls into the risk spectrum, you might think, so for a low or medium risk organization, a questionnaire would be just fine, because if they answer the questions without raising any eyebrows, then you may find that method acceptable in determining whether you want to do business with a particular organization. The most prudent organizations use some sort of balance between on-site assessments and third-party assessments, typically.
Is it ever appropriate for me to bring in a third party on my own to conduct the assessment or part of the assessment?
Yeah, we've seen that quite a bit, actually. In fact, some of the organizations use those third-party assessments specifically to avoid certain types of problems. They still want to be able to stay objective, for example. They want to make sure that the organization who's doing the assessment is familiar enough with the technology that is being deployed. So they might look for an expert in a particular technology or a particular business area. By using a third party, you can actually gain a lot of benefits.
Dick, how do frameworks such as ISO 27002 help specifically in third-party compliance programs?
It's interesting, Neil, that 27001 and 27002 give you some real benefits. So 27001 is the standard that allows that you can actually be certified by, and it discusses the process that an organization should have in place to manage their security. And then 27002 is a set of practices or controls that organizations can, if they need to, or if they want to, or if they fit, can deploy inside their environment to make sure that their security goals are being met. They give you a method to identify what's important about the relationship, number one. So if you follow the 27001 methodology, what 27001 requires is that you identify exactly what data, what information is at the heart of the relationship, and what risks are present. And then if you carry that method further, what it'll do is it'll say whether the risks are acceptable or whether they fall above the threshold of risk and need to be countered or need to be treated in some way. And then what you can do is you can look at your partner and your relationship and determine where those controls need to be put in place. So that's what 27001 does. 27002 gives you this set of controls that you can apply that are derived from best practices. And then you can determine which of these controls would help mitigate the risk that we've identified through that process that 27001 describes. So you can go through this laundry list of controls and determine which ones are really going to effectively mitigate the risk that you've identified together with your partner.
Dick, you mentioned some of the specifics about requiring partner compliance under PCI DSS. What about some of the other regulations like HIPAA, GLB, FFIEC, SOX 404? Are there specific requirements there?
Yeah, all of them require the consumer of the service to ensure that appropriate care is taken with the data that the primary entity, or under HIPAA, it would be called the covered entity, is entrusted with. So they require the contracting organization to enforce compliance requirements on the provider with the same technical and procedural content that the original regulation has pushed onto the covered entity in HIPAA speak. Now, the interesting thing is that, so PCI has probably the most prescriptive types of controls. I mean, they'll actually go down to the fact that you need application firewalls, that you have to do code reviews and so on, whereas the other regulations tend to be more general and that you can choose controls to implement the intent of the regulation. So you don't tend to see actual prescriptive controls coming out of the other regulations.
And what are my partner requirements of the new Massachusetts data protection law?
Now, that's interesting because I was actually under a different impression when I first read the law, and the more I become familiar with this law, the more it strikes me that it's different than other regulations. You're responsible for your practices and reviewing the practices of your service providers. But unlike HIPAA, the service provider is actually directly responsible for their care of the data. So it's not that the state can only come after an organization who's been directly entrusted with the data. The way the law is written is that the scope of the law says, in fact, I can read it to you, the provisions of this regulation apply to all persons that own, license, store, or maintain personal information about a resident of the Commonwealth. And that means that there's no exclusion for organizations who've gotten it from another party. If they store the information about a resident of the Commonwealth, then they're responsible for its caretaking, meaning that they actually come under this law.
What are some of the common mistakes companies make? Where do companies frequently fall down in terms of partner compliance?
I would say the most common aspect or failure is that they set and forget. They establish a relationship. They may do everything right when they first meet an organization and first set up the arrangement for partnership, and then they never visit that company again. So I mentioned before that you should be talking about technological changes, business changes, new threats at a minimum every single year, and how you can make that relationship better. So many organizations look into the security practices associated with a partner when they first initiate that agreement, and then they never look at them again. So that's one problem. Another common mistake is simply sharing too much information and taking on more risk than necessary. And after an organization establishes a relationship, they don't think about how they can, say, mask information. So instead of sharing Social Security numbers, because that's the account identifier, they don't think about hashing those identifiers so that they aren't actually sharing it or putting themselves at risk of regulatory compliance or even data breach. So the issue is they don't actually think outside the box on how to reduce the risk right out of the gate. They live with whatever risk and don't apply the kinds of controls that would actually reduce the risk altogether.
How does the equation change if I'm dealing with offshore partners, if my service provider is in India or, say, Germany?
So the first thing you want to know is how the local laws are going to affect whether you have any recourse in the event that something goes wrong. So, for example, if there are copyright issues, in a particular area, or even privacy laws that may prohibit you deploying certain types of controls, monitoring controls on employee behavior, for example. In the United States, you can read people's email. You can look at the kinds of information that is being transmitted from their desktops. In other jurisdictions, you can't. So if you expect certain controls to be in place or certain laws to be effective and they're not in the particular jurisdiction, that may change whether you really want to do business in that place or whether you want to put some other compensating controls in place. Another area you want to look into is hiring practices and termination procedures and how organizations do background checks on prospective employees. And then whether the organization has done any kind of security review overall for their entire environment. It turns out there are certain types of security processes that are more prevalent overseas in Asia and in Europe than they are in the United States. So you might look for 27001 certification in another place, and that might actually give you a better feeling about an organization overseas. But the idea is that you can't take for granted all of the controls that are in the United States when you start looking at the security measures that are going to be implemented elsewhere.
Thanks very much, Dick. It's been a pleasure.
It's been great, Neil.
For SearchSecurity.com, this is Neil Reuter. Hey, be careful out there.